This week I got a couple of important questions about the Bible, and in today's episode I'd like to at least begin to answer them. Stay tuned. Hello friends, Pastor Tim Westermeyer here, Senior Pastor of St. Philip the Deacon in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. Good to be with you as always. We're in the third week of Advent, and I'll actually say a word about that, where we're anticipating, I should say, the third weekend of Advent. I'll say a word about that at the end of the episode. This week, though, what I would like to do is respond to a question I got from someone about the Bible, and it struck me as a important topic and one that might be worth a little bit of our time. So I'm going to read the question as it came to me, and there are two, but they're related. So for this from the same person. First, if the Bible is a perfect religious text, what is the need of organized church and pastors? Doesn't that put an unnecessary middleman or woman, I suppose, between us and the Bible? That's the first question. Second, how do you defend the Bible supporting, in their quote marks, supporting slavery or not condemning slavery or other ideas that we don't believe in today's world? So again, the first question begins, if the Bible is a perfect religious text, what's the need of organized churches or pastors? And I'm going to start by saying, I've responded to this person offline independently, but this is one of the things I push back on is precisely that word perfect. I'm not sure, it's certainly not the word I would use to choose to describe the Bible. I would prefer a word like inspired, and we could talk about what inspired means. But when you say the word perfect, you are giving an attribute to something like the Bible in this case that really only belongs to God. And so that's a very important qualification. And a point that makes that really beautifully, I think, is actually a quote from Martin Luther, who in talking about the Bible compared it to the manger. We're approaching Christmas, of course, when Jesus is born. So Luther compares the Bible to the manger which holds the Christ child, right? So it's important, it's significant, it's profoundly important, actually. But he goes on to say, we don't bow down and worship the wood and the straw that it's made of. Instead, we bow down to worship the Christ child that it holds. In the same way, the Bible points us to a perfect God who we do bow down to, but we don't bow down and worship the Bible, okay? So that's the first point I'd make. I'd rather use the word inspired rather than perfect as it relates to the Bible. Another important point, and by the way, I'm choosing two or three points to make in what is going to be a relatively brief amount of time, I hope. We could talk about this for a very long time, and perhaps this will prompt questions from people. I'm happy to talk about other things related to the Bible as well. My point is I'm just scratching the surface. But back to that, the point of that first part of this person's question, that we have this, again, his language, perfect Bible. Why do we need people to interpret it? And I would make an analogy there between, let's say, the Bible, and I think he's relating it a little bit to sort of information that we consume, rules that we follow, which are obvious and self-evident and clear to us, so therefore, why doesn't everyone just go to it and figure it out for themselves? I would say you could make a similar analogy to a rule book for any sport you want to imagine, baseball, football, hockey, lacrosse, whatever. All of those sports have books of rules in them, but that doesn't mean that interpreting those rules is always easy. Or said differently, if there's a Major League Baseball game, you don't just drop the rule book of baseball behind home plate and let the game begin. You need a referee or an umpire on the field to interpret those rules in real time as the game is being played. And in the same way, yes, the Bible gives us all kinds of important information, and yes, it points us to God, but we need to interpret the words of the Bible in every new day and every new age. And to do that, we need people who are have the capacity to interpret the Bible. In some cases, that might mean theologians. It might mean pastors. Very importantly and very significantly, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, it also means reading the Bible in the community of the church through space and time. So Christians throughout history are part of the community that all of us turn to help us understand, well, what is meant by this particular passage that's a little bit difficult to understand or that isn't self-evident. We can look to Christians over time as part of that interpretive framework, okay? So the interpretive framework, one, we need some interpreters. And yes, pastors and theologians are part of that interpretive framework, but Christians broadly also are an important part of it, which is another way of saying it's a little bit dangerous for someone simply to sit at a desk by themselves. I'm not discouraging you from reading your Bible. Yes, of course you should, but a person needs a community, an interpretive community to help them understand it, okay? So I don't think that was the second part of his text. His assumption is that the organized church or pastors, in his words, puts an unnecessary middleman between us and the Bible. I don't think that's true. I think instead it helps to elucidate whatever the truth is in the Bible that is sometimes difficult to understand. Which brings me then to, I guess, I'm not sure how many points I'm making here. They're all sort of related. But one of the points I made back to him, which flies in the face of his word again of a perfect text, is the very first two chapters of the Bible, Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. I think we maybe have talked about this before. There are two creation stories, different creation stories in Genesis 1 and 2. And in fact, in the Bible that we have in our pews here at St. Philip the Deacon, there are some editorial comments. So chapter 1, and then there's chapter 2, and then there's a heading in before verse 4.5 or 5 of chapter 2 that says, another account of the creation. If you read these two chapters, I encourage you to do that. What you'll discover is that there's not one, but two stories of creation, and that they are irreconcilable. They are different stories of creation. The timeline of when things happen and the order in which things happen is different in each. In the first chapter of Genesis, plants and then animals are created, and then humans together, men and women, at once, simultaneously. In the second chapter of Genesis, first you have Adam being made from the dust of the earth, then you have plants and then animals, and then Eve is made out of a rib of Adam. Again, those are two entirely different accounts. You cannot reconcile them. And so, therefore, back to the point I was making before, any truth you want to discern from that is going to require some kind of interpretive lens. Someone to say, well, this is what we think is meant by these two different accounts, and there's truth there, but whatever the truth is, it's not trying to communicate this is how it happened. And that, by the way, I'm not going to go there today, but that takes us off on another tangent entirely about those stories and their relation to science and so forth. So the second part of this person's question is, how do you defend the Bible, again, his quote marks, supporting slavery or not condemning slavery? I think it's a unfair way to characterize the Bible. The Bible doesn't support slavery. The Bible needs to be interpreted to discover how through the lens of Jesus for Christians, the entire books of the Bible make sense or don't make sense, and how we interpret them together. I'm not sure I'm making that final point particularly clearly, but the point about Genesis 1 and 2 is that there are difficult parts of the Bible that require us to interpret them, and that's not only is it okay, it's beneficial, it's helpful, it's how we learn about our faith and how we grow in our faith. So, again, this is probably longer than I anticipated, and we've only scratched the surface, but that question raised again, in my mind, a number of really important, I'm grateful for the question. I think it raises a lot of important questions for us to think about as it relates to the Bible and what it means for us. How do we approach it? And if this prompts more questions about the Bible for you, please, as always, include your comments below or write into me, and maybe we can pick it up in a future episode. Speaking of future episodes, I mentioned at the start of this that we're approaching the third week of Advent. That's a special week. It's called Gaudete, G-A-U-D-E-T-E. It's a Latin word that means rejoice. And so it's a particular week of the Advent cycle when we come together and rejoice. And there's going to be a sort of special surprise, I guess, for us this week at St. Philip the Deacon related to that specific weekend of Advent. So if you happen to be in town, I hope you'll join us for worship. Perhaps I'll see you then. In the meantime, thank you for paying attention to what I think has become a bit of a longer episode. Sometimes it takes a little more time to say things, and that's okay. But thanks for hanging around if you've gotten to this point. And as always, until next time, be well, stay in touch, and God bless.